Pastor Brandon Robertson is an inspiring public speaker, a tireless activist, and a compelling author who has brought innovative thinking and bridge building to evangelical and LGBTQI+ communities of faith. His 2016 book, Nomad, A Spirituality for Traveling Light, has just finally been published in the United States, and I am delighted to welcome the author back to State of Belief Radio. Brandon, congratulations on the publication here, and thank you for being with us. I know that neither one of us wants to dwell on this, but it is important to remind our listeners of what happened to this book when it was about to come out in 2016.
Yeah, totally. It was a wild experience because I was first invited to got my first book deal, essentially, while I was in college at Moody Bible Institute. And it was a conservative publisher. They wanted me to write about millennial spirituality. And I was kind of already asking some hard questions about evangelicalism. So I signed the book deal, wrote this book. I was very excited and finally turned the book in 2015. But by that time, I had begun very publicly advocating for marriage equality. And internally, I was wrestling with my own sexuality and really at that time coming to terms with the fact that I was gay. And after I turned in the manuscript, received great praise from the publisher, a couple weeks later, they emailed me and said, hey, the Christian Bookselling Association has told us that unless you sign this statement that condemns homosexuality as a sin, we're not going to be able to publish this book after all. And I ended up having to obviously decline their request, and I lost that book deal. And then the week later, Time Magazine wrote an article about it, but in that article, they accidentally outed me publicly. And so it was just a whirlwind of both losing this book deal and then being kind of outed. And yeah, life has taken a crazy journey over the next 6 years since then.
You know, I've long thought that that experience helped galvanize your ministry and focus your activism even more. Any truth to that?
I think so. I think just feeling that sense of fear, that sense of rejection from the evangelical community at large, just at that time, it wasn't even because I identified as gay. I wasn't out yet. It was simply because I was advocating for the civil rights of LGBT people. Seeing that really, I mean, helped me kind of step into what I think is the more prophetic side of what Jesus calls us all to do, and really also cultivated my heart to build bridges and to go back into evangelicalism and try to help hold a mirror up and say, look at where your theology is leading you. It's not in a direction of loving your neighbor as yourself. It's in a direction of harming and rejecting and excluding. And yeah, that really has become the mission and ministry that I dedicate my life to.
Well, you certainly have been busy in these past 4 years, and that's an understatement. Yeah. What does it feel like for this important book to finally have a home here in our country?
Yeah, it's an interesting feeling because I had honestly kind of moved on. I've written other books since Nomad and kind of thought it was an interesting season of life and it was over. And then when I got a call from Fortress Press about a year ago, they said, we bought the rights to your book and we're going to publish it next fall. And easiest book deal I've ever had because I didn't have to sign or do anything. But I was nervous that over these last few years, I've changed so much. My theology's changed. But when I went back and reread the book, I really was surprised at how much the same themes, even if I would use different language today, the same themes that were present in me coming out of Moody Bible Institute are present in me today. And those are the themes of theological humility and being connected to a tradition while also straining forward and trying to be prophetic. And it feels good to finally be able to bring that home and to hopefully get to speak about it to an American audience, which I've never really had an opportunity to do.
Are there changes or updates to the book?
So one of the hard things about being an author is you have very little ability to change things. And so when Fortress purchased this, I wasn't actually allowed to revise or update almost anything in the book. So it is identical to the UK edition, but with a much nicer cover. And yeah, I think, honestly, it feels like that's probably a good choice too, because now when I get to talk about the book, you get to see in real time the difference of where I've evolved and how my faith has grown, rather than having gone and tried to revise and update the book, which would have changed its message and I think its meaningfulness in some ways.
I know that after Nomad was published in the UK, you had the opportunity to speak in many different places around the world and to hear from many readers. So what parts of the book have you learned are touching people most powerfully? What are readers connecting to the most?
Totally. That's the best part of the Nomad journey that I've gone on with this book is I've gotten to go to the UK and to Europe about twice a year, every year, speaking about it for the past 4 or 5 years. And one, to realize that kind of the same impulses that a lot of us post-evangelicals in the United States are experiencing, it's really happening around the world. And I think what people are resonating with is really the sense that I think the heart of Nomad is that I realized my theology taught me it was not an okay thing to step outside of the boundary of rigid religion. And it's not okay to embrace the fact that we're never going to know absolute truth. And so we might as well be humble and curious and creative with our theology. And so when I stand before audiences in the UK or in Europe and get to speak and say, give people permission, you can step outside of the boundaries. Yes, it's going to cost you. And yet what you're going to gain is a spirituality of wonder and awe and a life that leads you more towards justice and compassion and peace. You literally get to see it on people's face. People are just waiting for permission, someone to stand up and say, maybe what you've been thinking, maybe the questions you've had, maybe the doubts that have been occupying your mind, maybe they're okay, maybe they're good, and maybe you should take the first step and see what happens. And that freedom, I think, is what so many people are longing for.
Yeah. Well, the country and the world are so different from what they were in 2016. Going back through the manuscript, what do you see that has changed most about the audience?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think some of the themes in the book, I have a whole chapter on kind of the evangelical desire to go into culture wars. And in some sense, I feel like those of us who are more progressive have felt, for maybe the first time in recent memory, the need to kind of go into our own version of maybe war is not the right language, but a defense against the extreme attacks on human rights and the extreme perversion of Christianity by, frankly, the Trump administration and leaders around the world that are of that same ilk. So I think that chapter in particular, I do a lot of critiquing of the right-wing culture war, and I think rightfully so, but I also think that the audience today, now we really do feel like this prophetic obligation to call out the harmful rhetoric, the harmful practices, the deceitful pursuit of power and privilege that so much of evangelicalism has become aligned with today. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I could have ever predicted that. Back when I started writing the book, it was the Obama era, and President Obama is one of my favorite people, and so it looked like the world was just going to move towards progress. And unfortunately, I mean, it's been a rude awakening, but I really hope we do rise up and meet this moment.
What do you see that's different about yourself from the young man who wrote the book? What have you learned?
Yeah, I think I'm absolutely more clear on who I am. I'm less fearful of needing the approval of any religious establishment. When I was writing Nomad, again, the mindset was still somebody who was pretty firmly rooted in an evangelical tradition and really wrestling with if I could ever have a future as a pastor, as a writer, if I embraced my sexuality and if I stood up for the things I felt like I was being called to stand up for. I think today my writing, my preaching, all of this has just become more solidified, more confident. And that, I think, happens with age, of course, and with just maturity. But I also think this book has actually really been kind of the undergirding theme in the journey of this maturation over the past 5 years or so. And I just feel all the more certain that we need to stand up, speak up. I also feel all the more certain that I need to be doing more work with my evangelical siblings in the faith to help galvanize those who are starting to really wake up and be uncomfortable with what this tradition has become known for. And so in some ways, I just feel more confident. And in other ways, I feel like the mission that Nomad pushed me towards is the same mission that it's pushing me towards today.
Well, those are not contradictory feelings. It's really good to hear you say that, actually. The excitement that you bring to the process of exploration, both in your writing and your public speaking, is always compelling. It reminds me of the exact opposite of the phrase used by theologians Peter Enns and John Shelby Spong, who write about the sin of certainty. To me, it's as if you're always after the sacrament of uncertainty. Thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think that's spot on, and I don't know why or how that came about in my life, but I've been thinking a lot recently. I mean, I really appreciate it, and I realized there was a role for certainty when I was a 12-year-old boy who first stepped into a fundamentalist Baptist church, and my life was basically a living hell with an abusive alcoholic father and living in poverty and all sorts of things. Certainty played a role then, but very quickly after I got that foundational certainty, I began to realize just how big and wild and strange it is to be alive in this universe and how little we actually know about anything. And as soon as you start trying on that as the way you see and exist in the world, life itself just becomes all the more magical, frankly, to use language that might make some people squirm. But because you get to stand before the infinite creator that we call God and understand that we have this goal that we need to keep exploring and keep trying to create a better world, but also realizing that we are finite, we'll never actually grasp truth, anything close to its fullness. And so I think, again, that just gives you this permission slip to be curious, to explore theology, to use the Bible in creative ways instead of feeling like you need to arrive at certain truth, which, again, I feel like is what oppresses and suppresses so much in so many people in organized religion today.
Brennan, I'd like for you to complete this sentence, and you can complete it in as many ways as you'd like. Here it is. You should read Nomad, A Spirituality for Traveling Light, if... ...
Yeah. I would say if, one, you desire to understand the minds and the hearts of what I think is not just me, but a growing caravan of those who identify as nuns, ex-evangelical, spiritual, but not religious. That was really the initial goal of the book, was to help give insight into the kind of millennial mindset on religion. But also, if you want to discover a way to maintain a robust religious faith, but also do it in a way that doesn't contradict some of the most basic fundamental impulses that we have about certainty and answers and what Jesus would actually have us to do. So that's a lot of words to complete that sentence, but
I've spoken to more than one thinker who has expressed hope and even excitement about the level of positive change that the current crises are making the space for, if we seize the moment for the good, seeking, exploring, making the unknown your home is not just about fulfillment. It's also about dead ends, misjudgments, and loneliness. So how can we apply what you've learned in your journey to the incredibly high-stakes opportunity that potentially lies before us?
I think I've been thinking a lot about that question, especially as a pastor in the midst of this COVID-19 pandemic. And I do think it almost sounds cliche, and yet sometimes those old wisdoms are cliches for a reason. I think there is something really fundamental in this moment about both straining forward and getting innovative in our thinking about how we do life and do the world virtually, because that is where we're going to be for, I think, future indefinitely. But also, as churches, this season, and I talk about this in the book too, but this season has really caused us as a staff to ask, why do we do what we do? Are people actually missing gathering on Sunday mornings? And if they are, is it because they're missing community, or they're really missing the liturgy or the preaching? And some of the answers are not very comfortable for us pastors. I don't think people are really missing all that much sitting for 45 minutes listening to me talk on Sunday. Mm-hmm. So it's a question about how do we kind of return to a model of spiritual community and a version of spiritual life that actually is rooted in reality and what people really desire and what people need. And I think the early church image of Christianity is one, again, that's overused, but there's something about having communities that gather to support one another, to support spiritual growth, but then also to help create a better society from the ground up. And I know this pandemic has really clarified that in my vision and my colleagues' vision around San Diego. And I just hope that the future, we do learn lessons on the other side of this pandemic and really take this moment as God giving us a great reset, and we get to start over. And this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for churches, religious leaders, and spiritual seekers to do something different. And I do, like you said, hope we rise up and meet this moment.
Reverend Brandon Robertson is an author, activist, theologian, and pastor working at the intersections of spirituality and social renewal. He currently serves as the lead pastor of Mission Gathering Christian Church in San Diego, California. His book, Nomad, A Spirituality for Traveling Light, has just been published in the United States. Brandon, it's been a blessing to be with you along your journey so far. As always, I can't wait to see what the Spirit moves you to do next. And you know, we'll want to talk about it when that happens on State of Belief Radio.
Well, Welton, I'm so inspired by you and so grateful for the opportunity to be with you again.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Your donations help keep us on the air. Information on how to donate is available at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Stay up to date by subscribing to the free weekly State of Belief podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. And take a moment to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Be a part of the conversation. Social media helps connect like-minded people in conversation and company. I'd ask you to share State of Belief with just one person this week for whom you think this might be helpful. Our producer is Ray Kirstein. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.